Welcome back to the Training Babble Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Schell, and again, I'm joined by Dr. Phil Batterson for another episode of Fast Physiology. Phil, thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me on, Dave. I really enjoy these conversations, and it really does allow us kind of in the background to go back and forth and debate different things and, you know, make really hopefully a good user experience in terms of figuring out, you know, like sifting through all the stuff that's out there, you know, in terms of different topics and all of that. So, this has been super, super fun. And I think, you know, we're kind of crushing it with these little podcast episodes. So I'm hoping to keep it going.
Yeah. And if you have not listened to, the ones we've posted so far, we've been doing a series of short 20-minute-ish episodes, trying to be very focused and doing a semi-deep dive on different physiology topics. And so today we are going to discuss VO2 max, and this kind of came about from Phil and I going back and forth over text offline and debating, like, what is the most effective, I don't want to say protocol, but I think there's been a gravitation towards these short micro intervals. So whether we're talking about 40-20s or 30-30s or 30-15s or what have you, a lot of athletes love to do them. I've got a opinion on them and we've kind of gone back and forth over it. Mm-hmm. So let's start just by defining what exactly is VO2 max.
Mm-hmm. So VO2 max is the maximal rate of oxygen consumption that your body can achieve during high intensity exercise. And the reason why this is important is because oxygen is ultimately what is dictating your ability to do aerobic metabolism. So if you have a higher VO2 max, you have a higher ability to do aerobic metabolism. And by doing aerobic metabolism, you are going to largely spare the high octane fuels like glucose that are stored within your muscle or within your liver. And you're going to be able to use more fat. So we have, all of us have enough fat to probably run like 3 to 10 marathons on our body in terms of energy. So we want to use that as much as we possibly can. And then on top of that, we want to spare the glucose, that high octane fuel, to as late as possible. And VO2 max just says, okay, well, what's our capacity for oxygen consumption? And generally speaking, the larger it is, the better in terms of endurance performance we're going to be.
And so what are the components of VO2 max? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the components of, if you just look at the equation that would be given, during, say, an exercise physiology lecture or something, VO2 max is dictated by what we call the Fick equation. And the Fick equation is, I'm trying to remember it now, cardiac output times AVO2 difference. So let's break that down. Cardiac output is how much blood your heart is pumping per minute. So that is broken down into your heart rate, so how fast your heart is beating, and your stroke volume, how much blood is being pushed out of the heart per beat. So that's your cardiac output. You can think of that as kind of like the delivery side of the oxygen equation. Then we have AVO2 difference, which stands for arterial venous oxygen difference. That is how much oxygen is consumed as the blood passes through your arteries to the capillaries and then into your veins. So it's how much oxygen can be consumed over the muscle. And that is largely dictated by how well your mitochondria can use oxygen, because the only place in your body that oxygen is actually used is within the mitochondria. So you have your oxygen delivery side of things, and then you have your oxygen usage side of things. And the product of those two is what VO2 max is.
And so this is something that you can clear up for me, because I think depending on the source that I'm looking at, I've kind of heard it explained a different way. And so, like, in some resources, I hear that the delivery side is the more important factor and contributes most of it. And on other side, I've heard it's the uptake side of it. And so in that equation, and I like mm-hmm. I don't have it in front of me, but I mean, like, does that equation weight one heavier than the other?
The equation does not weight one heavier than the other, and you will certainly, depending on who the researchers you talk to, you know, there's like you'll probably get, because most of the research that looks at limitations to VO2 max points toward a cardiovascular, a delivery limitation for the majority of individuals. There's a really good review paper, his name by a guy named Ben Levine, back, I think, in 2008. And what he looked at was, you know, what could the potential limitations of VO2 max be? And if you think about it, VO2 max could be limited by anything in the oxygen transport, delivery, and utilization pathway. So you have your ability to actually breathe in and exchange oxygen from the environment to your lungs, to the blood. So your pulmonary system could be limiting. Your cardiovascular system, or the ability to pump that blood to the working muscle, could be limiting. Or your skeletal muscle mitochondria, so what's actually using that oxygen, could be limiting as well. And from largely speaking, it doesn't seem that the pulmonary system is actually limiting VO2 max, because the pulmonary system, especially at sea level, is really, really good at onboarding oxygen, offloading CO2, and it doesn't seem like we are running a quote-unquote oxygen deficit, you know, from a pulmonary perspective. And you could measure this by using a what's it called? A pulse oximeter, which is like what you would wear if you went into the hospital and they wanted to make sure that your arterial blood oxygen was high enough. Most of the time during exercise at sea level, that number doesn't really change. It might go down to 94%, but 94 to 98%, that means that your arterial oxygen is saturated 94 to 98% with oxygen, your arterial blood is 94 to 98% saturated with oxygen. So largely rule out pulmonary system limiting VO2 max.
And I want to say, too, I think that if I recall during the pandemic when they're talking about long COVID and stuff like that, they mm-hmm. said like even I feel like I read something where it was saying like even with like severely damaged lungs, rarely is it a limiter. Like, I mean, there's times people have a lobectomy and have part of their lung removed, but they're still able to saturate pretty good.
Yes. So I would say, and again, I'm using my words very carefully here, because I'm saying pulmonary system is not limiting to VO2 max. That doesn't mean it's not limiting to performance. So the pulmonary system, you know, is built strong enough to be able to onboard enough oxygen. Now the next step could potentially be, oh, is the cardiovascular system able to deliver enough blood? And there's a ton of really, really interesting studies where they like they took dogs and they snipped their pericardium, which is like the fibrous tissue on the outside of the heart. And they actually found that the dog was able to increase its cardiac output and its stroke volume and heart rate even further. So that's like one thing that kind of points to, you know, okay, maybe the cardiovascular system is limiting. But you have to remember, dogs are quadrupedal. Their distribution of blood flow is a little bit different than humans, but it, interesting study nonetheless. But then when they did stuff where they took blood out of the human and then put it back in, they would find that was directly correlated to changes in VO2 max. Mm-hmm. So that kind of points to, okay, maybe the cardiovascular system is actually limiting your VO2 max. Then on the final side of things, what the people have done is they've measured mitochondrial oxygen consumption capacity. And that can come in a number of different ways. You can do it non-invasively with near-infrared spectroscopy. You can do it a little bit more invasively by taking skeletal muscle biopsies and then evaluating how functional the mitochondria are by sequentially adding substrates that are that make the mitochondria happy and want to use oxygen. And there's one study in particular that looked and determined that there was a twofold capacity for greater oxygen consumption compared to what the body was actually delivering. So that is used a lot in terms of like when people say, you know, well, it's probably not a mitochondrial limitation because there's this study that shows that there's a two greater ability to use oxygen than we can actually deliver. So that's also cited. But one of the challenges with that study in particular is that hasn't really, that doesn't seem to have been recapitulated across all populations. So, you know, individuals who are extremely sedentary, maybe pretty metabolically inactive, other things like that, definitely have lower mitochondrial function. Individuals who are highly, highly, highly trained, that number, that 2x number actually comes down because the cardiovascular system actually is able to catch up. But nonetheless, that I think is like the history slash the background for why people would argue that the cardiovascular system is limiting VO2 max is okay. The fact that, you know, when it just seems like the ability for the heart to deliver blood, and this is why blood doping works so well, is because, you know, you're increasing your oxygen carrying capacity and your muscles are still able to use it. So if you're increasing your muscle, your oxygen carrying capacity, you're then just, or you're raising your VO2 max right there.
Right. And so with that kind of established, why does it matter? And I know it gets tossed around a lot, and like, I feel like it's pretty well known, and like everybody knows the term VO2 max, where maybe mm-hmm. they don't know some of the other terms. Right. And
yeah,
but it's not, I guess from my standpoint, having a high VO2 max doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a great endurance athlete, but it's nope. kind of like a ticket to entry, yep. you know, like you have to have it in order to meet your potential, but having it doesn't guarantee your success.
Yeah, no, that's 100% exactly what I would have said, is having a prerequisitely high VO2 max. And if we're talking just about numbers, so normally VO2 max is reported as a relative value. So milliliters of oxygen per kilogram of body weight per minute. And what that allows us to do is compare different individuals to each other. Right. Because if we just reported absolute values, then the people with the biggest VO2 maxes would be elite level rowers and really, really large human beings, like 6'4", 225 pound, just monsters.
Right.
But then, you know, you would be like, oh, well, you know, somebody who is a runner who is a lot smaller will probably have a lower VO2 max, but they're able to function really, really highly in terms of their, you know, in terms of their exercise capacity. So what we've found, or what the research has shown, is that when you get groups of different skill levels of individuals, VO2 max absolutely does predict endurance performance. If you have somebody who has a VO2 max of 20, they are not going to be able to compete as well as somebody who has a VO2 max of 40, 50, or 60. However, when you zoom in on those groups, so that group that has a VO2 max of 60 to 80, for example, or like an elite level athlete, the correlation essentially becomes flat, which means that there's no correlation between higher VO2 max and their performance. Right. So that's actually what my master's degree focused on, is then you have to start looking at other variables that do predict performance, like where your second threshold is occurring, what your exercise economy is, what your muscle oxidative capacity is, those sort of things. So somehow VO2 max has, you know, become kind of like this, like, number for your endurance performance, but it's really not, especially when right. you start to look at individuals who are very similar to you. So somebody who has a VO2 max of 50, if you have a VO2 max of 50, they have a VO2 max of 50, obviously something else is going to have to predict that performance, because one of you is going to be beating the other. Right. I also think there was a lot of, it's been around, I think, for the longest period of time. Like this concept of maximal oxygen consumption. So it's been developed even further. And there's, you know, like even people, there was a running coach, his name is Jack Daniels, who came up with mm-hmm. The Jack Daniels VDOT calculator. And essentially what he did is he just took a ton of people, measured their VO2 max, measured their, you know, race pace across different races and performance levels and stuff, and then was able to make tables that kind of correlate back and forth. So it's really easy to correlate then, you know, okay, what is my VO2 max based on my race performance? But again, really VO2 max is only attainable, you know, for the elite level athletes for, you know, 8 to 12 minutes at the most. For most of us, it's like 5 minutes at the most. So VO2 max is probably not a good predictor of any races that are longer than 12 to 15 minutes. So anything longer than that, you're going to, yes, VO2 max is a ticket to be able to, you know, get to high levels of performance, but you then have to start looking at different variables in order to actually figure out what's going to predict your performance.
Okay. So with that said, then why would an athlete want to increase their VO2 max?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think what it comes down to is you'd want to increase your VO2 max if it was limiting that potential, right? So for example, when you come into a physiology lab, a good physiological test is going to give you three variables, or it's going to give you a lot more variables, but the three main variables that we're looking for, four main variables, are VO2 max, second threshold, first threshold, and then exercise economy slash efficiency. Exercise economy slash efficiency is something that can be worked on separately from all of these, but if you think of your performance as like a house, where your roof, where the top of your roof is like, say, your VO2 max. Where your second floor is your second threshold. Where your first floor is your first threshold. And all of those are going to be different heights based on how well-trained you are and what you've done in the past. So there comes a point, though, where you might be pushing your second floor really, really close to your ceiling. Right. And that's not a very comfortable place to live, right? You don't have very much room to stretch out and do other things like that. So for individuals who have a high second threshold, they're going to want to push their VO2 max up before they can push their second threshold up further. So that would really be, in my opinion, what people would want to focus on. And that's why you have to measure all of it. You can't just measure VO2 max because you won't know where they are in proximity to each other unless you actually measure all of them.
Okay. So with that said, then how do we... I mean, like you said, you can go into a lab and you can have physiological testing. Most people don't have access to that. Mm-hmm. So are there field tests you can do that can approximate VO2 max?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the best field test would be, there's two tests that I think would be good. One of them is like a step test where it's like mm-hmm. you go increasingly harder and harder. 1 minute, like every 1 minute, you're increasing your wattage by like 30 watts, starting at 100 watts. Then you just go until failure, and then you can figure out how high your wattage got, what your max heart rate is, and then you can kind of get an idea based on some of the equations that are out there what your VO2 max would be. If you were to do like a field test outside, this would be something like a 5 minute max power, you know, sort of test.
Right. And that's kind of what I'm getting at is like, yeah. I think for me as a cycling coach, we've always used 5 minute power as a proxy for yeah. VO2 max.
Yep. And then we'll talk about this, I think, in a follow-up episode. But then the next thing you'll want to do is you want to figure out what your second threshold is, or your FTP, because you want to make sure that, you know, if your 5 minute power is 300 watts and then your 20 minute power is 300 watts, you got to do something to push that 5 minute power up.
Right. And so this brings us to the workouts and mm-hmm. kind of the best way to train this, or most effective way to train this. And this is where you and I got in the discussion. I think there is the popularity of doing 40-20s. Mm-hmm. And so when, depending on what people's protocol is, it might be like 40 seconds at 120% of FTP and then like 20 seconds at recovery, whatever, whether that's 50% or 20% or whatever. Mm-hmm. And some people might have different opinions on that. I've always been of the mind that yes, even though you're doing, let's say, quote unquote, VO2 max power for that 40 seconds, you're not getting the heart rate up as much as you typically would and stuff like that. And so I've always been a fan of longer sustained efforts. So like 3 to 5 minute repeats. Mm-hmm. So first off, one argument I would make is if I'm trying to improve 5 minute power, then I would want to do 3 to 5 minute intervals for
Absolutely.
Specificity, you know? Mm-hmm. And so on the flip side of that, with the 40-20s, what in your mind are we improving? What are we after with that?
So I think there's a time and a place for everything. And the answer to what is the best protocol for VO2 max development depends.
You have to pick one.
No, I know. So I will pick one here. So I totally agree with you in terms of like the best way to improve your VO2 max is by simulating something that is going to be similar to what your proxy of VO2 max is. So if you're trying to improve 5-minute power, then you better get on your bike and you better ride close to 3 to 4 to 5 minutes at that power output, extended periods of time with adequate rest in order to tax the system and push that up higher. I will say though that this is the crazy thing about, you know, like exercise physiology and research studies is that, you know, we have everything from those 40-20s repeated, you know, a bunch of times to 30-30s even have been shown to improve VO2 max, like measured VO2 max at the mouth. So I will say that it's like if it's a stress that is that the person is naive to, they probably stand to gain more in terms of physiological adaptations compared to if it's something they've done over the course of a really, really, really long time. So if you have somebody who comes to you and they're like, yeah, you know, 5 minutes on, 5 minutes off, that's my bread and butter. I do that every single week, you know, maybe twice a week. It's like, okay, well, that's probably not going to be improving your VO2 max anymore because it's just not enough stress because it's just, you know, it's just not there anymore. So what you would have to do is you'd have to back it off, or you'd have to switch it up. You'd have to say, okay, well, what we're going to do is we're going to do 40-20s until you can't do it anymore. And as opposed to doing, like, this is one of the things, as you just said it, is you're like, well, it's 140% of FTP. It's like, well, we need to get a measure of where your VO2 max is in the first place. We can't just randomly pick 140%. Yeah, it's probably a good starting point. But like for me, I'm really, really good at like those 30-30s. So my VO2 max power during my last step test was like 300, for example. But I was able at the end of my at the end of my VO2 max work to hold 405 watts for 35 seconds on, 25 seconds off. And I could do that 10 times repeat, and then I do, you know, like a 3-minute rest, and then I do that 3 times. So I think it. I think what I'm getting at is those shorter duration allow you to have higher intensity, so your body gets better at that higher intensity, so the mechanical output, while maybe not having quite as much physiological stress. So it's slightly different. It's more mechanical output, a little less physiological stress, but the overall goal is then to hopefully be able to push everything a little bit higher, because the progression would be, okay, we're going to start with 40-20s or 30-30s. We're going to get to 40-20s. Then we're going to do something where maybe we even get to 50-10s, which would be a little bit more threshold style work. But then we start to extend those out, 1 minute on, 1 minute off, 2 minutes on, 2 minutes off, 3 minutes on, 3 minutes off. So we get more sport specific as we go on.
And so I think this brings up another good point. We've probably discussed it in the past too. I think this is where coaches can get into trouble, or athletes can get into trouble too, is that we try to get too hyper-focused on what we're trying to improve. And we're like, oh, we're improving VO2 max, or we're improving this. And the reality is that it's on a continuum.
Yep.
And everything improves everything along that continuum to some extent for the most part. And so, yeah, it's like we're primarily focused on this, but it's also improving stuff up the chain and down the chain too. Mm-hmm. And so I think the reason I get into this argument is like, if I'm thinking about improving VO2 max, then I'm like, I still use 40-20s, but I don't call them VO2 max workouts. It's more about the, like, I coach mountain bikers. And so it's about the variability and like being able to like teach the muscles to contract and relax really quickly and things like that. Right. So I think you brought up a good point in that novel stress is so important. And like, one of the things I ask athletes when I first take them on is, what are your favorite workouts and what do you hate?
And then you give them everything that they hate.
Yeah. Cause that's probably what they need more of. Right.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
It's like, but I'll also say, and this is another reason that I kind of like pick this fight, is that most people love short, high intensity intervals. And it's because it looks really cool, looks like you're doing a lot of work, but it's not as taxing to the system, in my opinion, as a sustained interval. And lots of people hate sustained intervals, but it's like, if you're going to go out and climb a 15-20 minute hill, like, that's pretty damn sustained, you know? So anyway, I think that's part of it, is that like, people gravitate towards that short, high intensity stuff because it feels really productive. But if it's not programmed the right way, it might just be all for show, I guess is my point.
Yeah. No, I do agree with that. I think, you know, that's why I generally default to, if you can get to the three by five workout, where it's 3 minutes on, 3 minutes off by three, up to 5 minutes on, 5 minutes off by five, that's been shown time and time again to be effective, you know, whether it's running, cycling, other things like that. And I will say that, you know, like for if there's any runners out there who are listening, the 40-20s don't really work as well as the, you know, like 3 minutes on, 3 minutes off do, just because the having that rest period, so like 40 to 20, I think it's just, it just accumulates too much like actual pounding stress. But you could also try it, and it probably will work to improve your VO2 max as long as you're able to actually, you know, do it.
Yeah. And so what are the takeaways here? And I feel like we could probably do a 2-hour episode on this one, but basically what are the takeaways for you with the VO2 max?
Yeah. My biggest takeaways are, you know, use VO2 max training to potentially supplement your performance. If you're a longer course racer, you're going to want to do your VO2 max work in the beginning of your season, furthest away from your actual specific work, because VO2 max is not very specific to what you're going to be racing. If you're a shorter course racer, so races that are probably 30 minutes and lower, then you're going to want to have that VO2 max work probably a little bit closer to your racing season. And then you can implement any number of different protocols in order to improve VO2 max. Just know that it's going to be most effective if you are exercising at VO2 max intensity and having the physiological variables to come along with that. So VO2 max heart rate, or at least close proximity of VO2 max heart rate.
Yeah, and I think my takeaways would be, like I said, I'm not bashing 40-20s. I think they're great. I just don't think it's the most effective tool in my toolbox if I'm trying to improve VO2 max, but I've got another friend that would argue that. So yeah, I think ultimately we should be working on every aspect of our physiology across the season. And so, like you said, there's a time and place for everything. And so just choosing which tool at which point in the season is the important thing.
Yep. Totally agree.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for another episode of Fast Physiology, and we'll catch you on the next one.